You've been hearing ads for Zencastr for these past months. Interested in sponsoring this show or podcast ads for your business? Go to zen.ai/thearchaeologyshow and fill out the contact information so Zencastr can help you bring your business story to life.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heritage Voices, episode 63. I'm Jessica Uquinto, and I'm your host, and today we are talking about the Digging to the Other Side podcast. Before we begin, I'd like to honor and acknowledge that the lands I'm recording on today are part of the Nooch, or Ute People's Treaty Lands, the Dineta, and the ancestral Puebloan homeland. And today, we have the crew of the Digging to the Other Side podcast on the show. Would you guys all mind introducing yourselves?
I guess I'll go first. If we're going in alphabetical order here. My name is Anna Kuhn. I am currently the tribal archaeologist of the Spokane Tribe of Indians here in Eastern Washington. I am a director at large of the Association for Washington Archaeology Board of Directors. I'm also the founder and chair of the Washington Archaeology Mentorship Program. I'm a host of this podcast and affiliate of the Archaeo Gaming Collective. My handle is Short Round with an E at the end on Twitter and elsewhere. So that's me.
Hello, everyone. My name is Brian Baldione. I'm from Stockton, California. I am currently an undergrad at California State University Stanislaus, majoring in anthropology with a double concentration in cultural anthropology as well as archaeology. Right now, I am an intern at Sound King County Historical Museum, and I am also a board member for the Cultural Heritage Board for the city of Stockton.
Yes, I'm Daryl. My Twitter handle is Harusaki Emon. I'm actually not trained in archaeology, but actually through one of Sarah's previous projects, Archaeological Fantasies, I became very, very interested in archaeology. I have a general interest in a lot of different things, and so I eventually joined the Archaeo Gaming Collective group on the Discord server, and I run the Welcome to Goblin Town game with Anna as one of the players.
Hi, my name is Tommy Ng. I'm a longtime CRMer. I've been doing this for about over 25 years. I'm a partner in a CRM company based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I also co-host another podcast called Archaeo Cafe. And I'm on various committees here in Canada, especially with the Canadian Archaeological Association. And right now I'm part of an initiative of Parks Canada in terms of providing commemoration for, inclusivity commemoration. Okay, just trying to figure out how to commemorate various ethnic groups who have been involved with the formation of Parks Canada.
There you go. And my name is Sarah Head. I am also known as Archie Fantasies on the internet. I do the Archaeological Fantasies podcast. I am a longtime CRMer, cultural resource management, and I founded and then lost control of the Archaeo Gaming Collective as all of the other gamers came in and took over my game.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
Are you though? Are you? I don't have an impressive pedigree like the rest of my co-hosts, so I am very proud of them all.
Hi everyone, my name is Jessica Quinto, and I'm the host of the Heritage Voices podcast on the Archaeology Podcast Network. I'm a cultural anthropologist, so I do ethnographic research and tribal consultation. I am not an archaeologist, but I do work in CRM/heritage. I'm the founder of Living Heritage Anthropology and one of the co-founders and the president and CEO of the nonprofit Living Heritage Research Council. So, everyone, I'm very excited to hear more about what brought you all here. Like, what got you interested in this field, this type of work, this podcast topic?
Oh, man, you ruined my I clicked on a link joke.
Sorry.
Anna, what brought you to archaeology?
Oh, gosh. Okay, how do I summarize this very quickly? I was living in Japan teaching English, bumped into an anthropologist, got interested in the Ainu of northern Japan, wanted to pursue that, but was being told that anthropology is not a very popular field in Japan. So I went back home to pursue it, accidentally excelled in my archaeology class. And so when I needed a work placement, they put me in archaeology and I was just like, I'm going to leave this after like 2 or 3 months. Well, 3 years later, I was stuck. And I loved my coworkers and I loved what I was doing. And I accidentally fell into the thing that made me the happiest. I saw a place for me in this field and I wanted to stick with it.
Brian?
Okay, well, I have always been interested in past civilizations and history. I have ethnic roots from Ecuador and also have indigenous roots, mainly through my father's side, which I'm very proud of my heritage and past. And so I've always been interested in history, and I was originally declared myself as a history major through one of my mentors and looking at bedrock mortars in foothills of the Sierra Nevadas here in Central California. I realized, hey, this is somewhat amateur archaeology, and I fell in love with it, and that's how I got into this.
Daryl?
Well, I can't. It's kind of funny. Now that I'm thinking about it, I also have like a general interest in just like a lot of different things. I'm generally nosy or slash curious person. I remember when I was like 11 years old, it was 11, something like that. I found a book in the library. It's like fat dictionary book that said like the history of the world on it. And I tried my very best as an 11-year-old to read that thing. Never finished, but that has been my general attitude. And I guess behavior throughout my life is just to keep looking at things. I have spent a little bit of time in Japan, Korea, and China. And that sort of kind of eclectic approach, I think, has led me down through a lot of different paths. But what eventually brought me to this, specifically this podcast, would be Sarah's project, Archie Fantasies, that got me really, really interested in like archaeology itself, you know, as a discipline, as a field. And then coming into the Discord server, right, I was sort of able to interact with actual archaeologists and irritate the heck out of them and enjoy every moment of it. And now I'm here. I've been roped into this project now, which hopefully I bring a nice perspective to.
You do, Daryl. It's nice to have an outside perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Outside and inside with Daryl, really.
I started, my career started with a lie. My uncle said that I'm part Mongolian. So I grew up thinking like I was riding a horse through the steppes, raping and pillaging.
Wow.
And so exactly. And that kind of stuck with me. And so I grew up like everybody else and joined the army and all that stuff. And when I left, I went to university. I, like everybody else, I got a strong interest in history, took some archaeology courses. And I saw there was a job posting in CRM. They wanted somebody who could dig. So I figured, I dug a lot in the army, and I got hired, and I didn't realize that I had to slow down with digging. I had to look for stuff, not just to break ground. And from there on, I haven't left CRM, and I just continue on with archaeology. And the great thing is I like working with nomadic cultures because that general interest with the Mongolians, that I just fell naturally with working with the Plains Indians. And so I end up working with the Plains Indian cultures and stuff like that. And I enjoyed every moment of it. So, and like you, Jessica, I also do a lot of indigenous consultation and all that stuff too. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
So how did you find out that you weren't Mongolian?
Because my uncle lied. I found my uncle, he lies a lot. So I realized he has three different names too.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. And that's a story for another podcast.
So speaking of podcasts. Oh, sorry, Sarah.
What?
No, you go. Sorry.
Oh man, you're gonna make me like deep dive. Okay, so way back in the day I had to what's the last year of school? So my senior year of high school, we had to write a report about what we wanted to be when we graduated high school. And I despised this assignment. So I went to this book of like jobs you could have. And I opened it to the first page. And the very first page was anthropologist. And so I wrote a 5-paragraph essay about how I wanted to be an anthropologist when I grew up. And then when I actually went to college, I actually went to college for forensics. I originally started off in forensics. So I studied a lot of human osteology and criminal justice. And then, so my undergraduate is obviously in anthropology, like pretty much everybody. And when I graduated with my undergraduate, I needed to work. And one of the master's students who was helping me out with my undergrad project mentioned shovel bums. And so I went to Shovel Bums and I got my first CRM job, and I've basically been doing CRM ever since. So, and I enjoy it. It's not your typical origin story.
That is awesome. All right. So, okay. Tell me about the Digging to the Other Side podcast. What is it? Where'd it come from? What's the goal?
All right. So I do a lot of podcasts, and obviously my first child was the Archaeological Fantasies podcast, and
good kid.
It's a good kid. From there, I had the idea to start the Women in Archaeology podcast, and I got a great crew of ladies who have been running that podcast for years now. But I truly enjoyed getting it started, and I thought it was important to have a feminist eye view of archaeology. And the hosts of the Women in Archaeology podcast, I mean, they took that idea, they ran with it, they've made it their own. I mean, I cannot tell you how proud I am of that podcast. And so with that in mind, last year, I really started getting interested in where are all the Asian people in American history, because they don't exist. I mean, it's not that they don't exist. It's just they were. No, but that's the thing. Like, if you go and do, if you go and try to do basic research, just like basic research, not like the deep dives that we can do as archaeologists. If you're just a casual observer trying to find Asian Americans or just even Asian people in American history, it's very, very hard to do. Which got me thinking about, like, you know, the Stop Asian Hate movement and just all of the stuff with the plague. And I was just like, look, this is a whole demographic in this country. And I mean, I don't hear anything from them. That doesn't mean they're not talking. It's just I, as a white person, am not hearing this sound. And so I was like, well, let's throw a net out there and see if I can find anybody interested in being on a podcast who are themselves. At the time, I was looking for Asian archaeologists, Asian American, and America being like North and South, both continents.
And we accidentally got Tommy.
Yeah, and then Tommy came along, and I was just like, well, crap, this is all gone now.
It's like, whoops.
That is true.
Yeah, and then Sarah baited me. So.
That is also true. And then Anna stepped up and was interested. I told Daryl he was going to be on the podcast. He didn't fight me on it.
Have a choice, yeah.
Yeah, Anna roped Tommy in. Brian volunteered, so.
We love Brian.
We do.
Brian's the one we all love.
Baited me for a few weeks.
yeah. Brian was like, hey, I'd like to do that. And I was like, yeah. Sucker. There you go. We've just recently gotten one more person interested, so hopefully we'll have
thanks
some.
Thanks to Twitter. I've seen it on Twitter.
We've been reached out to by a couple others.
Let's do it.
It went somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then we
recorded sorry to cut you off, but it for people to start being interested in being a guest and speaking on this podcast, they wanted to see it first.
They wanted to see the product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They wanted to see that this was legitimate and not maybe even not like a tokenizing kind of thing.
And I want very much for it to not be perceived that way. And it has been difficult for me personally to navigate that because I don't want it to come off as that way. Like you can't get past the fact that I am white and I organized it, but ultimately this will not be my podcast. It'll just be a podcast that I got started, and hopefully y'all will take it and run with it like the Women in Archaeology did. Excuse me.
And also I want to say is like, yeah, even when we're like an Asian centric podcast, I think it's important that like info, you're white, your views come from that perspective. Right. And we could bounce off anything in your perspective. And even with Brian, because I know he's working on Chinatown, even like he's a young student, like even then, like he could ask us questions because like Anna and I, Sarah, you and I have been doing this for a long time, right?
We have a lot of perspectives here, and together together with the purpose of talking Asian-hyphenated archaeologists, but we all have come from very different backgrounds and experiences in archaeology or exposure to it, and so it meshes together pretty well, I find.
Yeah, and I like the idea because we're also part of the greater demographics of North America, you know. So we're gonna bring. I like the idea we're gonna bring a whole different perspective on this. Like we're still gonna try to keep more or less to the Asian theme, but I think we're gonna bring a whole different perspective.
Well, that's the actual driving goal. Yeah. It's not to just study Asian themed archaeology in the American continents. It's to hear Asian-hyphenated voices talking about archaeology. Like the goal is to basically have Asian archaeologists talking about archaeology. You can talk about any aspect of archaeology you want to. It's just important that it's being said from certain perspectives, like Tommy keeps saying. And that's why it's important to have Daryl and Brian on, because, you know, Brian's bringing that undergraduate perspective, that starting off perspective, and Daryl has that outside perspective. It keeps everybody grounded, I think. We have a good crew. I'm really impressed with the crew.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. And that's how Sarah pitched the idea to me, too, that, like, you know, it's not just talking about, internment camps every time, let's say, or Chinatown every time, let's say, but also just our experiences as Asian heritage archaeologists in this field, focusing on our position as archaeologists and the perspective we have as archaeologists, but just with different backgrounds. And I really liked that. And, you know, me and Sarah had been friends for like about, you know, almost 2 years at the time you pitched this idea to me. And if it had been anybody else, I would have questioned it. But because it was Sarah, and because I've been so proud and impressed of all of her projects, I knew that this would be a good one to be a part of, one that I could pitch to other people.
I was
not
actually
about
really hesitant to come to Anna because, like, she and I had a discussion about how she had just been put, without being asked, someone had just put her on a discussion panel about race and inclusivity in a...
I think that's where I met Tommy.
Yeah. But she's just like, they just added me. And I was just like, oh, that's a bad thing. And she's like, it's just because like I'm the only Asian person in the room. And I'm just like, oh, maybe I shouldn't talk to Anna about this.
but at that same conference too, where I met Tommy and Sarah, you caught a bunch of my presentations, particularly the solo one I did. I pitched an idea that I brought to the Association for Washington Archaeology Diversity Committee, which was, you know, going into archaeology, I didn't have any mentors or anybody who looked like me in this field. You know, part of it was exciting to me. Like, I could be one of the first in my area. I could, you know, bring something new and get something new going and inspire a new kind of archaeologist to come into this field, at least in Eastern Washington, right? But then it's hard when you don't have a mentor like you, and when things get difficult and you're wondering, you know, am I just going against the grain and I'm going to get weeded out of this field? I don't have anyone I can talk to about my unique experiences, and nobody around me seems to have them. And so I pitched this idea to AWA that I want to do a YouTube docu-series interviewing underrepresented archaeologists in archaeology or within the realm of archaeology. And that idea was well received, but, you know, we were just thinking, like, how can we do this and protect the participants? How can we do this? Who do we reach out to? The logistics just kind of like went on for a while. I pitched the project idea at the conference, but then it never went anywhere. And then when Sarah told me about this idea of a podcast, I thought, this is a way I can do it now. I can be that person, and I can talk with other of mentors that I would have liked to have, like Tommy, that I'm so glad I met. And
well, I know this is something that Brian's mentioned too, is, you know, in his classes. Brian, weren't you talking about Well, I mean, you were talking about representation in your classes. It's just your undergrad, your graduate classes, weren't you?
Yeah. So I feel like I'm the only Latino in my classes that is in anthropology or archaeology. And so just being here and just being on the Discord and learning from all of you is even just adding more to what I'm learning. And I'm trying to figure it out and trying to, I'm like, wow, this is a lot, but still haven't got my feet wet, but hopefully this summer.
Yeah.
Sucker.
And like, and Tommy was saying too, I remember during one of our episodes, Tommy and I were talking a little bit about how we don't have archaeologists in our families or families that really kind of understand going into a field like this. Mm-hmm. And then me, especially being a girl, my mom's looking at this and she's just like, this is not a field for girls. This is not a field for my daughter. And I don't know what to say back home in the Philippines, what my daughter is doing. And, you know, hopefully this is just a trend and she'll trickle out of it and go into a field more fitting of a girl. And that's tough at home. And then in the field, I'm not seeing, you know, other Asian American archaeologists, but much less female Asian American archaeologists. And then I'm just like, will I get weeded out? Is my family waiting for this to happen? But I'm still here. So.
No, because you're right. Because like it's in our, like in my culture, like the Chinese culture, like archaeology is not economically viable as a profession. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole point is you want to make a good living, right? So you look at careers that you can make a lot of money in, become a doctor, right, a lawyer, mm-hmm, or whatever. But archaeology? Yeah. And also the culture varies, because in my culture, like, we don't look in the past. We look forward. Why do you need to dig up the past? The past is the past.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you need to look forward. And so my family, they can't see that. They see that, at least my parents, they don't see that. They say there's no point in it. You don't need to dig up the past. You need to look forward.
Yeah, right?
And so
so
they equate that of archaeology. Without realizing, in China, there's been a lot of great archaeological projects been happening.
Yeah,
I mean, China's proud of its past, right? Which is ironic of the whole thing, you know. So like, so I used to tell my parents all that, and they're like, "Well, they say that's different. It hasn't do with you as living as a young man who needs to get married, have a wife, become an adult, and make lots of money."
So. And that's interesting. That kind of like that family pressure is interesting to me, because I mean that's part of this is why it's important to have podcasts that are talk that are in voices that are not just white right, people. This is exactly why it's important. It's not people need to see themselves represented in the media, but also like these are experiences that are probably pretty common in a certain demographic that I can't speak to because I'm not part of that. And I never will be. I mean, it's this reality of the situation. So, you know.
And then speaking, when we just go back to the role models, like speaking of role models, like I've been in this CRM for over 25 years, and I didn't, for the longest time, at least where I'm from in Western Canada, I was the only Asian in CRM. And then I figure I'm probably the longest, the most senior Asian Canadian in CRM, Western Canada. And next thing you know, I realize I'm becoming a role model for young people. I'm a bad role model, I tell you.
He's a great role model.
But I just talked to a young archaeologist, and he's of Chinese ethnicity, of Chinese heritage. And he's looking, and I'm helping him out to gain the business and stuff like that. And we talked a bit. And stuff like that. So I'm encouraging others, you know, like, so why not? Cause I can't do this forever, you know? Nope. So I'm over 50, so I'd like to retire soon.
Archaeologists don't retire. They just die in the field.
Yeah. I was going to say,
but there we go. There you go.
Well, on that note, we are at the end of our first segment. But we'll be right back having more of this amazing conversation that I'm very excited for. So be right back, everyone.
Chris Webster here. I have a pretty full calendar, and managing that calendar can be pretty challenging. I've got things to do every day and things I need to do once a week. Of course, people book on my calendar all the time, and I have to manage that as well. I used to move my recurring events around when something would disrupt them, but now I don't have to. This is where Motion comes in. It's an intelligent AI that manages your day for you. Put events that don't involve other people in as tasks, and Motion will move them around and break them up in ways that you dictate so you get everything done. If you'd like to take back your time and your day, then head over to arcpodnet.com/motion and check it out. That's arcpodnet.com/motion to get at least 25% more efficient with your time. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Register of Professional Archaeologists and the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's paleoimaging.com, and check out the link in the show notes. Chris Webster here from the APN. You've heard me talk about Zencastr for a few months now, and there's never been a better time to check this out and start a podcast. Zencastr has hosting tools and both audio and video podcasting capability. Many of you have already clicked on the link in the show notes, and we thank you for that. Use the code HEVO, that's H-E-V-O, at the link in the show notes, or go to Zencastr.com and use the code. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R.com to get 30% off your first 3 months. Again, use the code HEVO, H-E-V-O, for 30% off your first 3 months at Zencastr.com.
All right, and we are back. So, okay, I have to ask, where did the name come from?
So, on the server, we kicked around a couple ideas, or at least I threw a bunch of stuff at the wall to see what kind of stuck. So, I actually have a background in art, and my most interest is in like pop art, and I think I'm very, very interested in that kind of playful, funny, silly approach to things. I'm very much a kind of Muppets / Gary Larson in the Far Side kind of person, where I like to flip things, and so that's really what the name is it's that sort of really childish idea of I'm going to dig to China, you know, just to see what's on the other side, just to see. To sort of that sense of exploration and wonder, like, what is it like to be on the other side? But of course, then the flip side is then, what if someone in China or, you know, someone on the other side was digging the other way toward us? And so that's the kind of the flip of it. And for the artwork.
People in China dig too. Like,
yeah.
What is the saying there?
Well, I mean, kids love digging in general. So
that's my point. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I also did the artwork. Like I said, I have a background in art, so I did paint the image. And funny enough, I took pictures of myself as both the digger and the person on the other side. I have both hats. I have both the pith helmet and the conical hat. So
I didn't know this.
You shared the pictures on the Discord, Anna.
So if you want, I can post them to Twitter or something so you guys can see.
I've had a crazy year. Layoff.
Yeah, I want to see this. Yeah.
The one where he's squatting, where he's doing the... Yeah, it's a pretty funny picture because he's like taking it at angle and it's just like, are you trying to drop the deuce? So what's going on there?
We will definitely have to put those on the show notes.
I think you had a suggestion from the I guess I'm called the Oriental typeface.
Oh yeah, we did have no we did have a discussion about
what?
That
remember we had a discussion about that, and I said we don't need that because
the interesting thing about the typeface, Daryl did do some hand-drawn font.
Oh,
and it was
yeah.
Oh yes, we did talk about this. Sorry, I'm just like, what?
So Daryl drew the original lettering down, and I was like, nah, don't do that. When I make the icon, we're going to have to put our own stuff on there anyway. So Daryl used a very Asian-y, you know, generic kind of looking font. It was very cool. I'm not knocking it at all. Yeah. No.
He painted it himself.
So, I mean, like it was very nice. It was just like the message, maybe not the message we were wanting to send with the icon art. So then I grab it and put it into Canva, which is what I use for our art. And the font that I picked was not a... No. That's the font we ended up with. The original font that I used wasn't anything related to Asian anything. But when I put the font on the picture and then shared it up, just changing the context of the font with the image, it made it look like... you know, like a generic Asian-y font. And Tommy was one of the first. No, and Tommy was one of the first people to catch that. He's like, we're not trying to go for fortune cookie here. And I'm like, no, you're right.
No, we're not. Because it reinforces a stereotype.
It does. Yeah.
And we don't need that. Right. No. We don't need that. So, so get rid of it. Cause now what, with the digger wearing a rice hat looking through the hole, I think that's message enough right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
My artistic sensibilities cannot let something stand. First, it's not generic Asian-y font. I base it on Arabic. Okay, I don't remember some stuff, but I have tried to learn the Arabic.
I'm sorry.
Number two, the font that we vetoed, I'm also vetoing, is called Chop Suey. Its fonts have a name, so there you go.
No. The font I originally used was not called Chomp Suey. I forget what it was called. It was actually something French. It's a calligraphy. It was a calligraphy font. I wanted it to look like it was handwritten. No, I'm serious. I wanted it to look like it was handwritten. So I looked for calligraphy fonts, and that's the one that came up. And it's got a French name. But when you take that aesthetic and you put it with the image, you know, your brain makes an association with it, and it was not the association we wanted. So we nixed it and went with the typewriter font. And then Anna had to draw her own lettering on it.
Because that was just a resolution thing. I just wanted a image with better resolution. And then so for my font that I put on it, I went on like dafont.com. I cannot believe we're doing a segment on fonts right now. But so the choice of font I chose, I typed in dirt. And then I went with like the first option on the fonts for like a font that was
I honestly thought you hand lettered
resembling,
well,
I guess. I don't know. Somebody did, but it just wasn't me.
But the whole point is how we want to represent ourselves.
Exactly.
Right? Because we didn't want to use the Chop Suey font because we know that's too stereotypical. Mm-hmm. You know, it just reinforces perception, reinforces in people the Asianness, or I'm going to quote unquote the Orientalness of us. Mm-hmm. Right? And we don't need that because the whole point of this podcast, our podcast, is go beyond that. You know, that's telling people, look, you got to look beyond our complexion and know that we're just like anybody else. We, you know, granted, we all have our own, we all have our differences in terms of culture and stuff like that. But so what? So is a lot of Americans and Canadians who came from various backgrounds and stuff like that. But for some reason, we're the ones who either invisible or we stand out. You know, when
actually
when,
you do both.
Both. Like when there's a plague, we stand out. When there's nothing, we're invisible.
Or you get the the model minority thing where it's like, you know, and we get that as Jews too, where it's like, what are you complaining about? Because everyone just thinks you're really smart, you know?
Oh, God. Another stereotype right there.
I mean, if we're going to have this discussion, we can talk about white passing, but
I used to have people cheat on my math tests and stuff, and that's just like I'd laugh at it because I'd look over at the person like looking, you know, looking over my shoulder, and I'm just like, try it, enjoy the F.
You can still get those comments when people say, where were you?
Yeah, born? Exactly.
Yeah, in a hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On planet Earth many years ago.
I mean, I don't know. I still get that every once in a while. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, it's... No, I was just going back to the invisibility thing, though. When I was putting the intro to the podcast together, that was a whole other thing. Yeah, trying to find the right...
Oh, yeah. We had a music. Discussion about that.
And Daryl actually was the one that came up with the digging sounds. Mm-hmm. And so I ran with that. But see, what you guys don't know.
I like that a lot.
I was originally going to find, I was trying my damnedest to find railroad work songs from the Chinese workers. Because I know that some of those had gotten recorded. There are none. It's not that there weren't any, it's not like the Chinese workers didn't have work songs. It's just they were purposefully not recorded.
Yeah, that's right.
So I couldn't find them. And I was like, well, fine then, fuck it. We just went with the digging noises and that's all it is now. It's just the digging noise, which I actually kind of like.
Well, it's like here in Canada, when the railway was being built, right? A lot of the Chinese workers work on the railway. But when it came to the picture, when the last spike was hammered in, no Chinese workers were in that photo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, that's the invisibility thing, though. That's the thing I was talking about. Like, if you just do casual research into the history of Asian Americans or Asian Canadians, screw you. I am from this country. We'll pronounce it the way we want.
Canadians. Hey.
But yeah, I mean, it's completely erased. It's active. It was an active, conscious decision. It wasn't like an accident.
So what are some of the topics you guys have talked about so far? I mean, we have the name, we have the artwork, we have the font, we got the intro music. What have you guys talked about?
Oh, everything.
We've only had three episodes.
I don't know how we don't have an episode on fonts yet. We seem to have a lot to say about them.
But that could be on a pop culture.
You know, people think that putting a podcast together is easy. Well, they're wrong. their first episode was just kind of introducing everybody and kind of getting used to, you know, why this podcast even exists. What was the second episode? Oh, that was Japanese. That was the Topaz one.
Yes.
On the internment camp. That's right.
Yeah,
that's the third episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Brian and I did the Chinatown one. So we're trying to get we have more episodes in the works right now. So it's just trying to get everybody together.
Yeah, yeah. Field season starting up, and
yeah. But we got an episode on food coming up.
Yeah, and then we have another one on, you know, kind of tackling inclusion and, you know, diversity committees and things like that. And our tips for navigating that in organizations and associations. I'm looking forward to that one. And I know that me and Tommy have both been running into experiences about that we would like to talk about.
Tommy and Anna have strong opinions about things. I'm not sure.
But you can see me holding back on that.
I'm not sure if you're picking up on this.
Yeah, exactly.
And they feed off of each other. And then Brian and Daryl and I, we just kind of sit in the background and we're just kind of like, all right, well, whatever.
Well, like I said at the beginning of this, I wanted to be the Grover of this podcast so all of you can be the Sam the Eagle. So,
well, that failed. You're like the Bert to our Ernie.
Oh, my God.
We're also looking into bringing some guests. Yeah. Like, I think we got we got some people lined up. We got some. We're going to talk about Japanese internment camps.
Yeah.
I guess on the American and Canadian side, and so we got some people of Japanese heritage, and who have been actually working in these, archaeologists and historians working on these camps. So we want to talk about their perspective.
Yeah.
And we're also going to bring in another archaeologist. She's been working on Chinatowns. And so be nice. Like, I know Brian and I had a discussion on it. So it'd be nice to bring somebody who actually been working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian's done some really impressive research into the Chinatowns too. So,
yeah, exactly. So, we're looking, and I know in our Discord, we talked a lot.
Yeah. We regularly communicate with each other on there.
We're not going to say what we talk about though.
No, but we are friends. Another, I don't know if I've mentioned this to my friends, but another episode idea that has been kind of trickling in my head was looking into folklore and stuff in our cultures, you know, maybe for like a Halloween episode or like an archae, what's it called? archaeological fantasies, collab. I think those guys might be interested.
Why do you guys call me out? You and Daryl, what the fuck, man?
Those guys might be interested, but I know that, like, in my culture, you know, for my mom, she's got some interesting...
I love this story.
I'm not going to tell it because I'm going to save that for the episode, but she's got some interesting folklore that she has told me about, you know, growing up as a kid that severely traumatized me. And it's got some anthropology tidbits in there, and some anthropologists have looked into it, and I think it would make for a really interesting podcast.
I really want you, specifically you and Brian, to compare your folklore experiences, especially your growing up folklore experiences, just because of your backgrounds. Well, and I guess Daryl can jump in on it too.
Daryl, yeah, Daryl's got some too. Yeah.
Maybe.
it's just the your family background.
You shared a story your family told you not too long ago that would work really well.
Or we could just talk about the chupacabra.
Yeah, there's that.
Chupacabra or chupacabras? Okay, never mind. It's a Spanish thing.
So this is basically our process of coming up with episodes. This is live for all of you.
I was going to say, I personally would like to do an episode on Chinese women and early Chinese women immigrants. So
yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. I think I guess some people we could tap into that.
Well, apparently they were called poker brides.
What?
Poker?
What?
No, seriously, it was one of the names for them was poker brides, and I'm sure you can figure out why.
Yeah.
From context there.
Oh, and I know you and I were talking about these Chinese tunnels. Like there's this myth in Chinatown that there's this network of tunnels where Chinese people used to hide themselves and they used to run. Run people through them.
So my question with the tunnels thing, you know, since we're just hijacking this podcast at this point.
Yeah.
Did the tunnel thing come before or after the Vietnam War?
Before.
Oh, that's interesting.
Way before.
Okay.
There's a story goes around that even rum runners were using them. And they were in San Francisco, there were stories of during the head tax era, the Chinese to hide themselves in these tunnels. Where they're more like a connection, a network of basements. You know?
Were so like they, Chinese they, people actually ants? Is that what I'm supposed to be taking away from this?
Well, okay. Yeah. Serious question then. If it predates the Vietnam War, then is this story specifically about Chinese immigrants in North America, or is it a kind of folkloric story that gets repeated over and over again and it gets reframed, you know, for each period for that particular context? That'd be an interesting study.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it has started with the Chinese immigrant experience. And I think it's, I'm not, maybe I should find someone who could best speak about this. So I think this is where we could get a guest in who could actually talk about this.
Honestly, have they ever actually found a quote unquote tunnel that they could associate with the Chinese group? I'm not saying people can't dig tunnels, but I'm just saying, like, just because you find one tunnel doesn't mean like everybody was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're Priscilla Weger. She's been doing a lot of stuff on Asian American history, and she actually has it on her website, something about Chinese tunnels. And she and I talked about it, and she goes, they don't exist.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go.
They're a myth, and they're just a connection of basements and stuff like that. It's like, now because of that, people envision these, like, don't forget Chinatown. In history, people have a bad perception of Chinatown because it's seedy, right? And therefore, it's crime ridden awesome. Therefore, they have these network tunnels where they're running all kinds of illicit things and stuff like that. So
kind of gets back to like the whole idea of like the pirate tunnels, though. Like,
yeah, exactly. The whole myth started with that. Mm-hmm. So exactly, and nobody realized the whole reason North American Chinatown existed because of the head tax. Mm-hmm. Oh, because of the restrictions on Chinese immigration, I should say, not just the head tax, right? Like, you know, like they're forbidding Chinese women to come into the country, right? So what do you do when you get a whole bunch of men together? Well, we do because I'm crazy ass shit.
Okay, I do want to throw something back at Brian though, because like he did in the Chinatown episode, Brian did quite a bit of really good research, and he brought to our attention that just through the pictures, like the American Chinatowns, like he showed us a picture and he was like, yeah, this is
one
of the early Chinatowns. And I'm like, is that here in the States or is that in China? Because it looks like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, which makes sense. I mean, it completely makes sense. You're going to build your town to look like what you're familiar with. And
right.
So, but yeah, I would never have envisioned it that way.
What I did not mention on that podcast that where, you know, some of my research came from, or, you know, particularly most of it came from the book that I was reading, San Fao. I did not mention who was the author. Just want to give her a shout out if you ever listens, Sylvia Sun Minnick. And so she is a former Stockton City Council member, as well as community activist and a member of several Chinese American organizations throughout the state. And so her heritage comes from, you know, Chinese heritage, but also early Chinese heritage from Stockton. So I would just like to give a shout out to Sylvia Sun Minnick and San Fao.
Yeah. And that book is really cool. So there you go.
Yeah. I like those photos. That was awesome.
All right. I'm going to hand this back over to Jessica now.
I was going to say we could put the book in the show notes. If
absolutely.
There's a link or something on Amazon. Awesome. So we'll put that in the show notes. And then right now we are going to go to break, but we will be right back here in a second.
We've got a contest. The folks over at AEO Screen are giving one of our listeners a brand new screen. Pick anything from their website and they'll ship it to you. Not an archaeologist? No problem. These are great for gardening and other tasks around the house. I mean, come on, right? Anyway, these are great screens and you won't be disappointed. We'll pick the winning entry at the end of May. Head over to arcpodnet.com/screen for details on how to enter. It's easy and you can get multiple entries. Increase your chances by helping out others. That's arcpodnet.com/screen for details on how to win. Want to keep this conversation going? Want to talk to the host of this show and other fans? Then join our membership program and get exclusive access to the hosts, other fans, and early access to these episodes and bonus segments and content. You'll also get forever access to our live show back catalog and any other shows ad-free. Head over to arcpodnet.com/members for details. That's arcpodnet.com/members.
All right, so we're back and we were having a really interesting conversation during the break. As always happens, you have the best conversations during the break, right? And we were talking about recruiting guests for podcasts and that there does seem to be a tendency for a lot of these guests to be in academia or have PhDs. And let's go back into that conversation of why we think that is.
I guess since I was rambling on about it, right?
So yeah, Tommy.
I'm gonna say it's like when I was making, when I was networking, looking for various Asian hyphenate.
You're the one that told me to use that.
I know. In place of something else, right? So Asian hyphenate archaeologist. I found the majority of them, this is all anecdotal. The majority tend to be in academia, and after talking to a few of them, you know, they chose academia either because it's expected that that's how they view archaeology. It's prestigious,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, not a lot goes into CRM. I think it's once again, there's no it's not economic viable to, mm-hmm. to go into CRM. So the majority of Asian hyphenate archaeologists will be in academia.
And I think another thing is, it's not just that it's obviously where you don't make money. No, I'm serious. I think CRM gets shit on a lot by non-CRM people. And so like,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
If you're in, because I remember being in school and being gently steered away from CRM because it was looked down on. I was like, oh, well, CRM's where you go when you can't hack it in mm-hmm. academia. And it's like,
universities are still doing that. They're still saying that.
I know.
Yeah.
I fucking hate it. Because you know what? Statistically, statistically, it's like 70 to 78% of the people in school right now for anthropology and archaeology are going to be in CRM. It's just
right.
what's yep. going to happen. Because what, 30% of yep. you are actually going to make it to your master's degree, and even fewer of you are going to make it to your doctorate degree. And that does not guarantee work.
Right.
No, you're right. Yeah, you're right. And one thing that CRN gets poo-poo on, because we write a lot of
exactly.
We write a lot of technical papers.
Yep.
It's great literature. That's basically great literature. And so this is literature no academics, mm-hmm. I think most of them don't even touch. Because I remember there was a paper, well, it hasn't been published yet. It was a paper by two academics. They were talking about various stone features mm-hmm. they found in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. And they were saying how unique it was, right? Without realizing a lot of us CRMers, we don't think it's unique. Right. We find them everywhere.
Exactly. They ignore the work that we do until it's something that benefits their research. And then suddenly it's, we discovered XYZ. No, bitch, you didn't do shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same, like when I was in grad school and they're talking about having certain students mm-hmm. work on certain sites, students are just like, what work has been done on the site before? And then they'll say things like, oh, well, a couple CRM mm-hmm. companies looked into the site and did like little mm-hmm. tiny snippets of articles back in the day. So basically, these sites are completely untouched. No, they're not. They're not untouched.
No, they've been surveyed.
This is not. Yeah, exactly. It's.
They've been surveyed. They've been sampled. There's a catalog. There's an assemblage somewhere from these surveys. Anyway.
And the whole irony is like CRM research is based on academic research too. On top of that.
Yeah.
And so we feed off each other.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
We're all trained the same way.
It's just a lot of our literature is not published. No,
it's not published academically.
Yeah, it's not published. I mean, I think they're available. At least in my jurisdiction, they're made available, but they're hard to get to. So,
well, that is true. Like I worked for the state of Indiana for a long time, and any CRM that was done in the state of Indiana, a report had to be on file with the state archaeologist. But you can't get access to those unless you have the right credentials, which protects the sites. Like I get why that happens, but. Daryl couldn't go ask for a report.
No.
Hell, I don't even think Brian could go ask for it.
Yeah, they're going to ask you, like, well, what's your credentials? What are you going to use it for?
Yeah, what company do you work mm-hmm. for, you know?
And stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
So, and then they're going to charge you money for it.
Yeah.
It is. People can't see the chat, but Daryl says it's discrimination. It is, but it it does serve a purpose.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go back to the PhD topic. Okay, so that was one thought about the prestigiousness. Are there any other thoughts on why that might be?
Because in CRM, we're not as an industry, we suck.
No, means being taken seriously, which is kind of what we were talking about with the reports. Like, people pursue. I know a lot of women pursue a higher degree, like a master's and a PhD, because it allows them to be taken more seriously in the field of archaeology in general. Because like as a woman in the field, I can speak to this, you know, when you are a young or younger looking woman in the field, people don't take you seriously because you're a young woman and poof, what could you possibly know? Well, I got 15 years of experience, so I know a lot. And then when you start to get mm-hmm. older, if you somehow manage to not crap out of the field because you've broken everything that works, you get labeled as being the crazy woman. You know, oh, she's crazy. She talks to trees. Oh, she does this. You know, she knows her stuff about rocks, but, you know, she's kind of nuts when we get back to the thing. So it's like it's a double-edged sword. You're not going to be taken seriously. If you're the field director, though. Or if you're the PI and you've got that MA or that PhD after your name, you get a little bit more respect because you've put in the time, you know.
Well, then here's another question. Like, what was it like for Asian-hyphenate women then in archaeology?
Oh, my God. Yeah, Anna, what's it like?
Oh. Represent all Asian-hyphenated women right now.
Especially when they're like all of what, 4'11" and like 90 pounds soaking wet. Tell me what that's like.
Oh, thank you for saying that I'm much taller than I am. I get treated like a kid a lot. I get baby talk a lot. I get people construction crews trying to take advantage of me and trying to trying to fool me into, confuse me, fool me into doing things. And it's just, it's, there's not much, it's hard to, it's hard to speak on it, but it just, it hasn't been great. And then I see other women, taller women, women even younger than me, being treated a lot better. And that's what's really difficult. And I've had some women tell me, oh, Anna, the trick, a tip I can tell you is to maybe like wear some makeup and try to look older than you are, or like, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and
but
it's like, that's not something I should consider in this field, in my profession, in my career. That's not something that I should be told to do.
But here's another thing that I want Anna to talk about, because we're picking on her right now. We've talked about this before, about how to flip that perception of yourself. And one of the things that you brought up was, oh, I'm going to be the angry, crazy Asian lady. And I was just like, well, that's funny, but I'm not sure if that's where you want to go with it. But that was your defense mechanism. That's where you went with that. And it was very specific. Like, I can't be the crazy Asian lady. So like, that was your thing. Why did you go there? Why was that even a thought in your head?
That stemmed from something that somebody kind of taught me when I was living in Japan. You know, as foreigners in Japan, especially if you've got, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, and you really stand out in Japan, city like Tokyo where I was living, sometimes we don't as foreigners, we're not getting the same kind of respect that somebody born and raised in Japan might, a Japanese person born and raised in Japan might, right? And so my friend from Austria, I don't know if she'll be listening to this, but hi, Lara. She told me that whenever she was disrespected on the train, or if somebody was like getting in the way of her, like sitting down and being a butt to her for whatever reason, or, you know, there's, you know, perverts, like train perverts and stuff like that, that Tokyo is especially known for. She said that she would just start yelling and screaming in German, and that she actually started doing that whenever we weren't with her, and that it would freak people out because they don't expect that. That's not something that they expect. And so I think when I made that, hopefully it was a joke, I don't remember having that conversation, but you know, this year has been such a blur, pandemic to age this podcast episode.
Oh, I will find it and show it to you.
I think when I said that to you, I was thinking back on that, being told that by my friend, and just, you know, it's something different. It's something that they're not going to expect. And it's something within my wheelhouse to do.
But did it treat you any different because you're Asian? I mean, you always hear stories about, you know, you got white guys who have yellow fever,
so yeah. Right?
And you got white guys who intentionally marry Asian women because to them they're more domesticated.
Dated guys like that,
right? Yeah.
Okay, Anna, tell us how domesticated you are. Now we're just picking on Anna. I'm sorry, that's rude. Yeah. Tommy, what? What's it like being an Asian male in the field, though?
I don't get yellow fever.
Oh, God. This episode's gone to heck.
I wish people would eroticize me.
This isn't our podcast. Reel it in.
I will say, though, that like, similar to Tommy, I would also get asked a lot of the times, like, "Ooh, what do you have for lunch?" kind of thing, and like or like what do your parents think of this, what this, you know, this field that you've gone into? And I'm looking at the construction crew like, what do your parents think of you working on an excavator all day? Like, why are we having this discussion? Yeah. And then
okay, but they make more money than us, so
I might consider it myself,
but still.
I was gonna say camera. Do you see Anna in like a fucking backhoe?
Oh, rage hammering.
Oh, shit. I don't know if they make the seats high enough for you.
So next segment.
I love you. Brian, you wanted to jump in on this, though.
Alluding to what you said earlier with indigenous and Latino, Latina, Latinx in academia, and feeling that they have to. For me, it's, I guess there's several reasons. For me, it's just believing, first and foremost, believing in myself that I can obtain to that to that level, to the highest level of education, if I have the chance to do it. I mean, right now I'm trying to obtain my bachelor's, but if I have the chance to do it, for me, it's why not? It's more so believing in myself. Mm-hmm. And second, it's how many people or how many Latinos, Latinas, Latinx are in academia and teaching. All of my teachers have been predominantly white, especially in anthropology. And so I think that's very important to diversify that field. And third, it's really giving back to my community, and me coming from an underserved, underrepresented community like Stockton, I would like to give back to it and get and show these people, or show my community that, you know, if you believe in yourself, you can, you can do this.
Mm-hmm. You just, that's another episode we could do, Brian, right there.
And these goals of Brian are how it should be. This is how it should be.
And I'm not knocking Brian's goals, because they are, he's absolutely 100% correct. Mm-hmm. But coming back to Tommy and I, he and I have been doing this for, well, he's been doing it for 25 years. I've been doing it for 20. This is a real field. This is real work.
Oh no.
This is there's real research happening. Yeah. Here. I mean, but we don't have, I mean, I have an MA, but we don't have PhDs.
Right.
You know, Tommy runs a company.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't mean to like knock on CRM, because obviously I'm in CRM. I'm not going anywhere. I'm stuck in CRM. I love CRM, but.
But see, no. Go back to that. I'm stuck in CRM.
What? No, seriously. I didn't mean anything by that. But the thing is, the goal that I see a lot of underrepresented, marginalized archaeologists going into academia as opposed to CRM, a lot of the times it's because they feel as though they can't get respect any other way, like as we were talking about, and that they have to go through all the way higher education to get that respect from the from their families and from their fields. Like my family looks at CRM akin to construction work. They're not going to look at me being an archaeologist in academia akin to construction work. And that's not saying construction work is bad or anything like that, but it's just, I want to see more people go to academia, because not because of perception or society perception, family perception, anything like that, but because they want to do it. And so that's why I'm proud of Brian. Whereas I always worry about myself, that if I think about it in my brain, like, maybe I should go for a PhD, maybe I should go back into grad school, I'm constantly thinking about why. I need to make sure it's for a good reason. Why? What's wrong with CRM that I want to leave it? Why am I thinking this?
Yeah, because I think if people went into it for the reasons that Brian's going into it, and I assume Brian's going to try to pursue it as far as he can get. I'm just assuming this, Brian. Feel free to correct me. Then I think academia would be a more friendly and more progressive. I mean, people are all constantly, and this is one of the show episodes we've been bantering around, the whole idea of, like, you know, we talk about, we want archaeology to become more inclusive. We want it to become more diversified and that kind of stuff. But yet there's a lot of barriers that keep people who are not white men out of the field. And Brian has talked about that in his undergrad, you know, some of the pushback he's had from some of his own classes, some of his professors. I don't know if you get any pushback from your own classmates though, Brian, you'd have to speak to that.
I would say yes, I do.
But what do you do when you feel like you're getting that? Like what do you do when you feel like that's happening?
I mean, I just try my best in all my classes, and I try my best to participate. But at the same time, I try to just be inclusive in discussions and not try to talk over people, or I try to give everyone a chance and try not to put the focus on me, as compared to I see other students, especially white students with a white professor, in a way, just trying to get on their good side. And it's not that I'm trying, I just be myself. And I think that's an important part, right? You want to build a relationship with your professor, but also, or right, professors. But I feel like it's a little bit, you have a white professor and a white student excelling, and then the Latin students or the minority students in the class who are just quiet for the most part.
Or you get people like Anna Worked Under, who's looking for their star minority student.
And also too, like, I don't want to elaborate on this or anything, because like, this is, I mean, we talk about this a lot on our podcast episodes, but for me in CRM, and also when I was in, you know, universities too, since going into this field, it's felt a lot like lining up against a wall for like kickball, right? And me with profiling, with gender, and with my ethnicity as well, I felt like I'm always going to get picked last. And it's really, really difficult to look at my colleagues in the eyes, especially when, you know, field season kicks into gear and if we're field teching or whatever, right? To know that if I were to put in for the same job as my colleague, they might get it. And we can be the same level of expertise, or, and not might, they will get it. And just always, you know, getting picked last because of profiling like that, you know, it's made it really difficult to be in this field sometimes.
Tommy, just curiously, have you had that experience?
My experience is different. Maybe because for the longest time, I was the only visible minority in the field. So nobody thought about how different I was from everybody else. So I think for a good 10 years, I was like, it was just me. You know, I didn't meet anybody else who was like me. For the longest time, it didn't bother me. I did had casual racism in the field. Like when you meet the odd rancher and farmer, or they will say like, I never met a Chinaman outside a restaurant before. Or stuff like that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Jesus. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I love landowners.
But the thing is, you learn to deal with that, right? And so it wasn't until later on in my career that I realized I can't be the only one. And for the longest time, I was the only one, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's when I started to reach out. And that's how I met John. That's where I met you, Anna. Because I start realizing, and then that's why I start building this whole network and realize – I'm not the only one. I mean, I'm the oldest one. I'm next to John, right?
You're the oldest one.
In CRM in Western Canada, or in Canada for that matter, and I think off Canada, I'm a trailblazer. I mean, especially as an owner of a company, I am a trailblazer, right? So, there's nobody else in my position. Nobody. Yeah.
I want Anna and Brian to hear what Tommy has said here, because like there's a difference between like what Anna was saying, like I know I'm going to get picked last, and Tommy's like, I won't let you pick me last. So I just want you, I'm serious. I want the two of you to absorb that and like take it with you, because Tommy's an unusual perspective. And yeah, sorry, we need to wrap this up. But anyway.
I am thankful to have him as a mentor now that I've known him.
No, I want the two of you to go and kick ass.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And don't take sass from people.
And I want you two to come to me when something's wrong. I tell you guys what to do. And you guys know I'm a straight shooter about this, right? So
yeah.
That's true.
And then hire us and then pay us the big Canadian dollars.
Monopoly money. Woo!
But we do need to wrap up.
Sneak us in. You got to sneak us into Canada.
So since we're finishing up this podcast, and obviously we're talking about your podcast as a whole, and we kind of went through like some of the different elements of your podcast, and we talked about, you know, like creating it, and we talked about current episodes, future episodes. What has the reaction been so far to your podcast?
We've been canceled. We've been canceled, taken off air. Spotify is like, we do not want this.
No, I'm kidding. I'm absolutely hard cancel. No, I'm
well, I guess I should have known Spotify that before I invited you guys on.
Fast enough. Right, exactly. Sorry, you're going to get canceled by proxy. Yeah. I just should have warned you.
You're the only one that will like interview us now. So
like. I'm going to let them talk in a minute, but I am going to step in here. I have been both very pleased with the reception that the podcast has received, and I have also been kind of disappointed. And the reason for that is yes, I am on the podcast, and yes, I am one of the hosts of the podcast, at least in the first three episodes. And I know that I was the one that put the call out, and so I was very visibly attached to this. I have been a little irritated by the number of people who approach me with questions about this podcast in particular before they approach Tommy and Anna or Brian or Daryl, who are all on the same social media platforms as I am. So on the one hand, I'm really glad that people are listening to this podcast and they're enjoying the podcast and they're getting value out of the podcast, because that's the point. But at the same time, I'm a little dismayed that as the only white person on the podcast, I am the one that's being approached above the other people on the podcast. So, but now I'm going to shut up and let the rest of them talk.
Oh yeah. I mean, I just quickly, like, building off of that, cause like I looked up my announcement about the podcast on Twitter, cause we talked about how, I posted mine separately and got a little bit of activity on there. So I got over, let's say like over almost over 200 likes and things and retweets and things. It got, you know, modest reception on there, but hearing that people are primarily contacting Sarah with all that reception and feedback that I've been getting on my post, I only got one person actually reach out to me, and I let them know about our email, but I only got one person reach out, and on Twitter anyway, and say that they were interested in being a guest and speaking with us on our podcast, particularly because not only even just to be on the podcast, but because they wanted to speak with us, to just have discussions and conversations with us, because they haven't met any other Asian-hyphenated archaeologists in their neck of the woods. But then other than that, I've had friends of mine hear about the podcast and then text me or email me or reach out to me on Facebook and things and say, you know, this is what you're working on, huh? Okay, this is actually really cool. And when you told me about this a while ago, I wasn't sure what to think, but now I'm interested in potentially like speaking on there. I'd love to meet you guys. I'd love to speak on the podcast. I love this idea, and this is really cool. So I think people just needed to, like I said before, people just needed to see what exactly this podcast was going to be all about. But I know Tommy's got some stuff too to share.
Yeah, on my side of the border, I think because I'm a senior level CRMer in Canada, I think because the reaction is a lot more different. People respond to me directly.
Yeah, you know,
because I have always been actively involved with the Canadian side of archaeology, and I got feedback from a couple of instructors at universities that they put down our podcast as required listening.
Yeah, that was so exciting to find out about.
And the feedback I've been getting is this is something the first three episodes they listened, they actually enjoyed it. It's like it was an eye opening for a lot of them to see this point of view. And that's why they will put down as required listening. Yeah. And so, I mean, and that's why we need to do more. Yeah. We got to do more episodes. So I think because once again, where Sarah was getting feedback directly, right? But for me, because everybody knows me here, we're a smaller community, right? But everybody knows me here. They just contact me directly.
Yeah.
So I think because I've been around for such a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, seniority. So people now, I'd realize that I'm in that role model now. And so I could help other underrepresented archaeologists to come up the ranks and stuff like that. So
yeah. You're a role model of mine, Tommy. That's for sure.
I'm a horrible role model. You know that.
Yeah, but you are one. But
I think that's a lot of seniority there, too. Brian, have you had any reception? What's been your experience now that the podcast has gone live?
Oh, well, for me, I have not had any reception or anybody reach out to me, but personally, for me, it's been truly a humbling experience when I reached out to, or when I seen Sarah's post or Arky's post on Twitter, or her tweet, right? At the time, I was on bed rest. I had a really bad knee injury. And so I figured when I had my injury, at that time, I was not following anything archaeological on Twitter. And so I figured I was going to be on bed rest for a couple of months. So what am I going to do? Just be on Instagram all day? Like, I might as well dive, I guess, kind of learn about, maybe network. And from there, like just reaching out to Arky and being on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's been a truly remarkable experience that I'm very thankful for. And to have this opportunity to learn from all of you and to have Heritage Voices have us on this, I would have never expected this 6-7 months ago. And I'm very thankful for it. And I just want to keep on going and just keep on exposing and telling the world, you know, I think this is very important.
So, yeah, everyone, make sure that you go check out the Digging to the Other Side podcast. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. They have plenty more examples, really interesting stories over on the other side. So that's kind of a funny pun there. That was not intended. But on the Digging to the Other Side podcast. So check it out. And thank you guys so much for coming on and sharing all of your stories with us today. Thanks for listening to the Heritage Voices podcast. You can find show notes at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/heritagevoices. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Play Music Store. Also, please share with your friends or write us a review. Sharing and reviewing helps more people find the show and gets the perspectives of Heritage Voices amazing guests out there into the world. Don't we just need more of that in anthropology and land management? If you have any more questions, comments, or show suggestions, please reach out to me at jessica@livingheritageanthropology.org. If you'd like to volunteer to be on the show as a guest or even a co-host, reach out to me as well, jessica@livingheritageanthropology.org. You can also follow more of what I'm doing on Facebook at Living Heritage Anthropology and the nonprofit Living Heritage Research Council, or on Twitter at Living Heritage A. As always, huge thank you to Lyle Belenqua and Jason Nez for their collaboration on our incredible logo.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Max Lander.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks for listening. Please consider joining our growing core of members over at archpodnet.com/members. If you liked what you heard, consider leaving a review wherever you're listening to this.